backing tracks to whatever you're able to play with one instrument at a time. And we'll speak with Tobin Frank from PG Music, who developed this tool, and with Pete, our very own Pete, who wrote the JAWS scripts that enables it to be used quite seamlessly with a screen reader.
So that should be a fun show, and I hope you'll join us for that.
You've been listening to Eyes on Success, hosted and produced by Nancy Goodman-Torpy and Peter Torpy, and distributed by WXXI Reach Out Radio.
You can access the full archive of previous shows, subscribe to the podcast, and much more by going to our website, www.eyesonsuccess.net. If you have questions about anything you've heard on the show or have suggestions for future shows, send an email to hosts@eyesonsuccess.net.
Thank you for listening and have a nice day.
Next on Recording Library of West Texas Radio, the Midland Reporter Telegram and Odessa American's Business and Oil and Lifestyle sections, followed by Far West Texas News at 7.
Now, here's your forecast for the Midland-Odessa area. It's 63 and partly cloudy. Tonight, clear with a low in the low 60s. Then, tomorrow, sunny with a high in the low 90s. Tomorrow night, clear with a low in the low 60s. From the Recording Library of West Texas 24-Hour Weather Center, I'm Maria Lopez.
Coronavirus updates, weekdays at 1.
This is the Recording Library of West Texas. It's 6 a.m.
Welcome to this week's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American Sunday Business and Oil sections, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the oil report of the Midland Reporter-Telegram for Sunday, May 24th. Methane game changer. Methane sensor network will be tested in the Permian. The story was written by Mella McEwen. Amid the chaos of the coronavirus pandemic and low oil prices, the energy industry has not lost sight of other pressing issues. High on that list is the industry's environmental impact, particularly methane emissions. To that end, Pioneer Natural Resources and ExxonMobil are joining with the University of Texas at Austin Gas Technology Institute and Environmental Defense Fund on a first-of-its-kind network of sensors to monitor methane emissions. Project Astra is a sensor network that will leverage advances in methane sensing technologies, data sharing, and data analytics to provide near-continuous monitoring. These sensors will be placed in a Permian Basin oil field. Quote, "We're initially providing the first location for testing later this year," Mark Berg, Executive Vice President of Corporate Operations for Pioneer Natural Resources, said in a phone interview. He said the company is working with the university and research team on their parameters, quote, "and then with our operations team," end quote, to select one of its locations in the Midland Basin for the test. Pioneer will also contribute its know-how in the process of selecting the technology to be used. ExxonMobil officials told the Midland Reporter-Telegram by email that the company is, quote, "committed to staffing and funding components of this multi-year project. Our scientists will work with UT to validate data and provide a deep understanding of how the operations work in the Permian. In addition, as we announced in April, we have more than 1,000 well sites that could be used to locate sensors as the program develops," end quote. Burke said it is, quote, "really important to be able to have a continuous monitoring system that covers a wide area like the Permian It could be a real needle mover for the industry to be able to use methane sensors instead of older technology like cameras. End quote. The company has been outspoken on this for some time, he said. Quote, this is an important element for operators in the U.S. End quote. Not only does the ability to continually monitor methane emissions tackle an important issue affecting the company's social license to operate, but it is more cost-effective. ExxonMobil agreed, saying in their email that, quote, this is important because it shows potential to create a cost-effective, high-frequency monitoring system that will be available to all operators and help reduce emissions across the industry. We are committed to the development of technologies and partnerships that reduce emissions. End quote. Like Berg, David Allen, lead investigator on the project, said in a phone interview that the project could be a game changer for the industry. Quote, standard practice in looking for unintended emissions has been for operators to go to every site and look for unintended emissions once a year or every 6 months, said Allen, professor of chemical engineering at UT Austin and the director of the Cockrell School of Engineering's Center for Energy and Environmental Resource. Quote, most of the time they won't find anything. About 90% of the time they make their way to the site to look for emissions and find nothing. That's because it's so time-consuming to do once a year or every 6 months. End quote. Having a continuous network will remove that inefficiency so that when an alert is received, quote, they can send someone at a time when the probability is high something will be found. End quote. Allen credited the advancement in methane sensor technology over the last several years for making Project Astra possible. But beyond that, he also cited advances in data analytics as making a significant contribution. Quote, if you take the Permian Basin with over 100,000 wells and deploy thousands of sensors throughout the Midland Basin and Delaware Basin, how do you take all that information and make sense of it? So it's not just the sensors, but data analytics, he said. The challenge is being clever about where to put the sensors and how accurate and precise the sensors need to be, he said. Quote, the first thing we need is to take all the new sensors that are just emerging from labs and companies and really test them to ensure they can withstand the conditions in the Permian Basin, Allen said. Continuing the quote, we'll gather all the sensors that appear to be ready and test them at a pioneer site to see how they perform in the Midland Basin and continually test them for months to see if they will continue to operate unattended and continue streaming data. This will be done until February to make sure the sensors encounter all conditions, end quote. The test needs to be at a Permian Basin site with about 1,000 wells, he said. To intelligently place the sensors, UT will build a digital twin of the region, one that simulates what the pressures will be minute by minute and what emissions will be minute by minute. That will be coupled with a digital twin of the atmosphere and how it will evolve minute by minute and the atmospheric conditions that will be encountered. Quote, we will use that digital twin to design the network for optimal placement. We'll do that over the course of 2020. By early 2021, we will have designed the network and our goal will be to deploy the sensors by mid-2021. By the start of 2022, the goal is to have a full network deployed and operating, Allen said. Quote, we're very much looking forward to getting out in the field, he said. In addition to designing the digital twin and synthetic atmosphere, He said UT researchers will be working with their partners in the project to decide what sensors will go where and what magnitude of emissions they want to detect. Speed matters when recognizing methane emissions and addressing them, Ben Ratner, Senior Director for EDF Plus Business, said in a phone interview, quote, "We need to accelerate progress," end quote. Quote, "Project Astra can move the industry from occasional monitoring to rapid and continuous monitoring," he said. "That could be the future of methane emissions monitoring," end quote. The project, Ratner added, addresses the hardware piece, the sensors, and the software piece, the data processing that generates meaningful information. Quote, "EDF is keen to assist projects like this that actively seek to reduce emissions at the same cost as traditional monitoring," he said. His group will provide its environmental mission and determination to the project, as well as scientific expertise, to provide insight on the magnitude and quality of the emissions, quote, "and constructively challenge projects like this that lead to new ways to do business. This will set a foundation. It's a walk before you can run. It provides proof of concept. I hope that after the concept is proven, it sticks, and continuous monitoring will be adapted by operators large and small," Ratner said. Shutting in wells raises concerns about jeopardizing leases. The story was written by Miller McEwen. In response to low oil prices and rising supplies, operators have been quickly shutting in producing wells. But there's a chance that action could threaten an operator's lease and raise questions that could find a way into court. Quote, "Naturally, the market is reacting to conditions. Operators are having to shut in their wells. This is a situation we've not seen on this scale ever," Christopher Hogan, an energy litigator, said in a phone interview. "With operators having to shut in wells that are otherwise capable of producing in economic quantities," he said, "the question arises, does the operator keep the lease?" Quote, "What are the rules? How can I hold on to the lease?" said Hogan, a Houston-based lawyer who said he spends a lot of time in the Permian Basin from Midland to Pecos. Quote, "It is interesting to look at this unprecedented situation," he said. "Everyone wishes it was easy. There was one rule that fixes everything. But it's really a lease-by-lease specific issue. Leases right next to each other may vary in small ways," end quote. He spends time looking at his clients' issues and lease clauses, he said. Quote, "One that people talk about most in this situation when the world feels topsy-turvy is the force majeure clause," Hogan said. The parties who craft the leases insert clauses as to when production can stop and what's required under the contract, but no specific case has clarified when production can stop because of a lack of storage, which prompted much of the well shut-ins in recent months. Quote, "If there's a clause that allows that, then you're sitting pretty," Hogan said. "If not, then the question becomes too attenuated. The pandemic didn't cause the shut-in of the well. It caused demand to drop, which prompted the shut-ins," end quote. Some leases do have clauses that allow for shut-ins, but the problem is those clauses are generally designed for natural gas, he said. Quote, "If a pipeline shuts in, you can't store natural gas, so a lot of leases have provisions specific to natural gas. You have to look at the lease to see if it gives you the ability to invoke the shut-in clause if you're producing oil, perhaps if a well produces both," end quote. "It's important to review those leases sooner rather than later," he said. Quote, "Leases that were valuable 6 months ago will be incredibly valuable again," end quote. Hogan went on to note that lease disputes don't follow the expected narrative. Quote, "I can't tell you how many of my cases aren't the stereotypical landowner versus an oil company," he said. "It's oil company versus oil company," end quote. Those disputes stem from one oil company claiming the other voided the lease by shutting in production, and thus they have a right to acquire the lease, he said. Quote, "It will take a while to sort out," Hogan said, "either by the Texas Supreme Court or the two intermediate courts. Someone will need to answer the question, was the pandemic foreseeable, and could it trigger the force majeure language? Things that haven't been litigated will get thoroughly litigated. By the time we get there, 3, 4, 5 years from now, until that time, you'll see more lawyers like me flying into Midland and the surrounding area," end quote. He said that, as a result, new leases will begin including specific language on whether or not the inability to store oil can be used to allow wells to be shut in. Quote, "At the end of the day, it's in everyone's best interest to work out a deal and make compromises," he said. Operators need to use caution in shutting in wells' equipment. Having a checklist, not skimping on maintenance, can save on repair costs. The story was written by Mella McEwen. Operators shutting in production to save money may find themselves spending far more than they anticipated if their wells and equipment aren't properly shut in. Quote, "If you don't take precautions up front, it will be more money spent to bring that equipment back into operational condition," said Bobby Gossett, Vice President Operations with OTA Compression. Gossett and Grant Schwartz Welder, President and Owner of OTA Compression LLC, OTA Environmental, and Kymark, discussed best practices last week in a webinar focused on issues related to well and battery shut-ins. Quote, "Given the low-price environment that exists right now, there are a lot of people looking to cut costs, reducing preventative maintenance, looking to take equipment offline. What are the options to save money, facilities-wise?" Schwartzwelder said. Gossett, a former field supervisor with Jagged Peak Energy and Envervest, said, quote, "Some of the main cost drivers operators see are saltwater disposal costs, chemical program costs, continuous injection. Shutting in a well does away with a big chunk of those. The main consideration is, you can trim back on maintenance programs, but you need to be careful what you cut back on. A lot of programs need to be continued to maintain the lease. You need the facility to be ready to go without any issues so you can avoid large costs in the future," end quote. He recommended that operators look at their sites individually and design programs around that facility and the equipment on that facility. Quote, "If you plan to produce wells at any given interval, preventative maintenance needs to be done around that equipment and how it will operate, like on a 30-day interval. It's like parking a pickup truck. If I'm going to park that pickup truck and not keep the battery charged, when I need it, it's not going to be available," end quote. Operators also need to take into consideration issues such as the existence of carbon dioxide or hydrogen sulfide that can promote corrosion and cause equipment failure down the road, Gossett said. Quote, "There are a lot of things you need to keep operational, even if shut in, like flares. You need to keep those pilots working on the flares," end quote. Gossett suggested using checklists, such as ones used before a facility is brought online, or a commissioning checklist used to ensure the facility has been properly assembled. Look at the pressure safety valves, drain any water, and make sure moving parts are protected and lubricated, he said. He also suggested pulling the fuses and making sure the equipment isn't energized. Quote, the most valuable tool we had was a pre-startup safety review. I recommend that before a shut-in, go through and make sure all the T's are crossed and I's dotted, he said. Doing lockout-tagout would also be a good idea, he said. Quote, isolate segments, blow down the equipment and lines, Gossett said. You need to apply lockout-tagout. The biggest headaches I've seen are when someone says they didn't know the valve was closed. It's very likely the person who shut in the facility is not the same one bringing the facility back online. It requires you to be on your toes, to have guys who know what they're doing. All that pressure, that formation pressure, after you shut in a well or facility, it can get dangerous real quick if you don't know what you're doing. End quote. Taking the proper precautions can not only ensure the safety of the workers restarting the equipment, but avoid environmental damage as well, Gossett said. Quote, make sure there's no leaky valves on that unit. Take off all the inlets and outlets and any openings to the atmosphere. It sounds simple, but I've had a lot of facilities built before wells were completed sit for a period of time. The largest headache was the motor valves, anything with a breather cap. Something so simple can lead to large events, spills, fires, large flares, he said. Corrosion and spills are the largest risks from idle equipment, Gossett said. Quote, spills can get costly quickly, especially when you're running short on manpower and not physically visiting locations as often. When you have a mechanical failure, by the time you see the spill, it may be larger than you'd like. All the money you've saved in capital expenditures will go into the cleanup effort. End quote. If one good thing comes out of the current economic environment, Gossett said, it's that, quote, the industry will pull together to improve efficiencies and work together on best practices, end quote.
Hello, this is Cindy reading Viewpoints from the Midland Reporter-Telegram for Sunday, May 24th. Programs can help small businesses during COVID-19. Permian Basin Business Bureau. The Coronavirus Aid, Relief, and Economic Security, CARES Act, was passed into law with the intent of helping those financially impacted by COVID-19. Small businesses, such as local restaurants and retailers, have struggled because consumers are spending increased time at home. In addition to relief for American workers, employees, and families, the CARES Act provides assistance to small businesses. While Texas has begun allowing businesses to reopen, the road to recovery will take time. If your small business is looking to take advantage of opportunities offered by the CARES Act, here's the information to keep in mind. Paycheck Protection Program. This program provides small businesses with loans to fund employee payments, including benefits for up to 8 weeks. Certain nonprofits can also apply, and funds can be used for paying rent, utilities, and interest on mortgages. Qualifying businesses can also convert the loans to grants, meaning the money will not have to be repaid. Economic injury disaster loans. All businesses with fewer than 500 employees, or more than 500 for certain industries, are eligible to apply for EIDLs. This loan advance can provide up to $10,000 for successful applications, which does not have to be paid back. If your business submits a successful application, the funds will be available within days. Business tax changes. Under the CARES Act, certain changes were made for business taxes. These changes include eligibility for employee retention tax credits, delaying payroll tax payments, claiming corporate alternative minimum tax credits, and more. Consult your business tax consultant to see which changes apply to your business. If you do not have a consultant, go to BBB.org to find trustworthy tax professionals. Families First Coronavirus Response Act. FFCRA makes changes to the Family and Medical Leave Act and sick leave for businesses and their employees. Covered employers must provide up to 80 hours of paid leave to all employees unable to work because of personal quarantine or COVID-19 symptoms. Up to 80 hours at two-thirds of the regular pay rate are provided to those unable to work while caring for a relative impacted by COVID-19. You can visit the Department of Labor's website to learn more details about FFCRA. Small businesses are the heart of communities across America. The CARES Act strives to provide extra protection for business owners and their employees. Visit the Small Business Administration at sba.gov to learn more about what CARES can do for your business, and go to bbb.org to search for trustworthy small businesses in your area.
Hello, this is Michael reading The Economist by M. Ray Perryman from the Odessa American, Sunday, May 24th, 2020. This is not the 1980s. Oil production costs are down sharply in Texas in recent years, but they are not yet at a level to maintain viability given current prices and uncertainty. As a result, significant disruptions in oil production areas are occurring. The industry initiated a rapid shutdown of drilling activity, which rippled through an enormous supply chain and supporting retail and service enterprises in the affected communities and entire state. Banks with large energy loan portfolios are being strained, and midstream and downstream investments are being deferred. Although concentrated in a few areas, the fallout permeates all regions of Texas. With the oil market in disarray, comparisons are being drawn to the horrific events of the 1980s. While such discussions are both natural and inevitable, they are both misplaced and incorrect. I've talked about oil markets previously, but given the importance of the industry in the Texas economy, it's worth a deeper, closer look. One key difference is the sheer speed of the downturn. The prior decline began in early 1982. And did not reach its nadir until a rapid fall in 1986. This time, it unfolded in a matter of weeks. The 1980s downturn came on the heels of the 1970s embargo and energy crisis, which brought major cutbacks in energy usage and sluggish demand. By contrast, the current situation arose as a manufacturing boom in emerging countries was driving solid global increases in consumption and no import ban. The near-term situation in oil markets is undeniably severe, but it is a temporary aberration stemming from an unprecedented health issue. As the economy reopens, demand for oil will rise and markets will normalize. This is not the 1980s. Be safe. M. Ray Perryman is the head of the Perryman Group and serves as Distinguished Professor at the International Institute for Advanced Studies. And now, here is Dennis Ellum's column from the Odessa American, Sunday, May 24th. Quote, "Never Fight the Fed." Quote by Dr. Marty Zweig, former ELF, on Wall Street Week. I generally think that government interventions are futile. The money never goes where it is needed, nor to the people in need of help. But the Fed is spending billions every day. I suspect that was the source of the 900-point Dow Jones Industrial Average rally last Monday, with zero follow-through the rest of the week. But the Fed is not going to run out of money. If the Fed is buying junk bonds, I suspect they bought a few shares of Apple along the way. The FANG stocks have all completed five Elliott waves up, and most momentum indicators suggest stocks are fully priced and due for a pullback. This morning's stocks are quiet prior to the three-day weekend. Texas, along with the rest of the nation, is reopening. Apple has run back to its early February high around $320. Most stocks are still well above those highs. The rally has been concentrated in either FANG stocks or quarantine favorables. Those include Carvana and Peloton, as well as others, none of which are making any money. The Democrat Rescue Plan has instituted the $15 hourly wage, which they have wanted, with the bonus that no one gets the money without working. This expires at the end of July, but the bill up for vote today would extend to January 31st, 2021. Biden is wooed to offer free college, the Green New Deal, and a guaranteed income. The next in line for largesse would be entire states of California, Illinois, New York, and New Jersey. All have underfunded pensions and ever-expanding budgets. Will the rest of America want to bail out those states? Oh, liquor stores are open in blue states, but not the churches. Will voters approve that social order? Continental Resources cuts production 70%. West Texas Intermediate closed at $33.92, up sharply from negative territory a month ago. Like stocks, momentum.